Hadi bakalım. Hadi bakalım.
I keep reading about how Gen Z is just built different. There's been a long-term trend of young people voting Democrat across the West. If you're in the UK, they're voting Labor. If you're in the United States, they're voting for Democrats. But lately, at least since 2024, we've had this interesting change amongst men who are of Generation Alpha, where all of a sudden in Germany, they're voting for AfD, and the United States, we're voting for Republican, and in the UK, they're voting for the UK Independence Party. Now, the Democrats are aware of this, and it's been announced they're spending millions of dollars to try to change that whole outcome with mixed success. But what we do have is this interesting moment to contend with the death of Charlie Kirk, of who is going to take on the mantle of the young people and what is that going to look like? How are young people going to result to his assassination? So in the studio today, we have with us Jeremy Carl, who is here going to give us a perspective from Generation Alpha and how you're orientating towards politics. And I wanted to just welcome to the show, man.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Yeah. And of course, we have here Kyle and Bennett on the buttons.
Yeah, we got a replacement for Joe today.
Yeah. with the D heard mean.
Nice. It was perfect. The first one I could
reach. Yeah. We're getting pumped. So I found out about you because I went to the Turning Point USA event. I debated a protester afterwards, and we put a video up on that on YouTube this week. And you asked a question, and I wanted to start out playing that question, and then we'd dive into this stuff because I think it provokes out a lot of what we're seeing when we're asking the question.
Specifically, you asked a question to Vivek Ramaswamy. He was the guest here in Bozeman, Montana for the Turning Point event. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, let's just play it and so everybody sees the context of what happened. You probably saw it. It was pretty viral. But here is the question.
Hi, Vivek. You would profess to be a conservative, correct?
I'm a proud conservative.
If you are an Indian, a Hindu, coming from a different culture, different religion than those who founded this country, those who grew this country, built this country, made this country the beautiful thing that it is today, what are you conserving? You are bringing change. I'll be 100% honest with you. Christianity is the one truth. Jesus Christ is God, and there is no other God. He is part of the Holy Trinity, and any other God is a demon, and it's false. How can you represent the constituents of Ohio who are 64% Christian if you are not a part of that faith?
Like I said, I'm not here to justify my faith to you any more than you are to me. But what I do share is the value set this country was founded on. And I think that it's really important that we not reinvent the founding of this country and what it was actually all about. The founding fathers, they had an opportunity to write a religious code just like most other nations in human history. All right, founded either on a monarch or a particular faith or a particular lineage. That's where most nations in human history are founded. Not America. We are the only country in the human history where there is a set of civic ideals that brought together a divided polyglot group of people 250 years ago, where freedom of conscience was a core belief set of our founding fathers, all the way to Thomas Jefferson. You know who he is? What, you know what document he signed?
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, and what was his belief system?
He was a deist.
He was a deist. Our third president, the man who signed this nation into existence, was a deist. Do you know who Benjamin Franklin is?
Yes.
Do you know what his belief system was?
He was Quaker, yes.
He was also a deist similar to Thomas Jefferson. So what I think that we often do is we talk about U.S. history. I have a better suggestion. It's actually consider reading U.S. history. Consider studying U.S. history. Learn the founding of our country, and that's what made our founders, I believe, the most extraordinary people known to the history of man. We would do well to actually respect their legacy rather than to reinvent some sort of imitative version of every other nation in human history. That's not us. I'm sorry, that's what makes America great, and that's why I am proud to be an American. This is the country that I will die fighting for if I have to, because it stands for those ideals, and that's why we're here.
Right, so
keep praying and pledge allegiance to the flag, my friend. Thank you.
Of course, Christ is king. But my response to that would be the same way that my church would let a practicing Hindu, a practicing Muslim, a practicing Jew come in and enter and worship with us on a Sunday morning. that person would not be allowed membership. And I'm not saying don't give other religions citizenship. I'm just saying you can have freedom of religion in an extremely religious environment. And that is what our founding fathers intended. If you look at the structure of our government, it is a replication, a mirror of the structure of Reformed churches in America in that time.
Absolutely. I think our nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles. The question is, what are those values? They're the values enshrined in the Ten Commandments. Do we share those values in common? You're darn right we do. And I think that people of most faiths across this country share those values in common. What we're failing to do is actually standing for those values in the government that as it actually runs. And so, you know, what I suggest is study U.S. history, study what made the country great. And if you think Thomas Jefferson or Benjamin Franklin were not eligible to be founders or leaders of the country because they were deists, then you and I respectfully have a difference of opinion. And yet the beauty of our country is we're still able to have that difference of opinion and still call ourselves fellow citizens. Thank you, my friend. All right.
Thank you very much, Vivek. Have a great rest of your day. God bless you. Christ is King.
Thank you, my man. All right. Keep praying.
Nice, man.
Nice, dude.
Thank you.
What was that like?
It was really cool. I had a good time. Yeah. I love talking about politics, and I love just being able to, you know, engage with somebody of his level, of his experience. So, yeah.
For context, you're 17, right?
Yeah, 17, junior in high school.
Yeah. It's going to come as a shock to a lot of people.
Yeah, yeah, no, you were very articulate. It was really well, put out. Now, so you have your opportunity now to get the third step in. Like, what would you say to Vivek now on that exchange? Was he wrong? Did he make a good point? Like, what's your response?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first thing I'd say is I think he made a bit of a concession at the end there. You know, when he talks about, I agree, Judeo-Christian principles in government. You know, he says Judeo. Yeah, you know, it's just Christian, but whatever. You know, that's a whole other conversation. My response to what he would have said right there would be, okay, you think that we should keep fighting for those principles in our government, so then why would we vote for a Hindu? Because they're not going to uphold those principles, in my opinion.
Why wouldn't they?
Well, so Vivek, you know, he comes from a culture that's drastically different. For example, he doesn't see, like, religion in and of itself is a massive part of your identity. It affects every part of what you believe. And so if you look at Vivek and the policy disagreements he might have with a lot of Americans, for example, his views on foreign relations, his views on legal immigration, that'd be contradictory to a lot of Christians who understand that our neighbor comes first before somebody across the world, that our fellow Christians come first before the nation of Israel. And that's, you know, somewhere where Vivek doesn't align with us, and I'd argue that that's because his lack of Christian principles. Mm.
So but he was raised in Ohio, mm-hmm. right? Went to a Christian school, I believe. I remember right?
I believe so.
That right? Like, yeah, so he, like, Christian private school. So what is it about his background that would lead him to be, I mean, especially because in my impression of his foreign policies, he's not that much of a interventionist, Israel first type candidate.
No, absolutely not. And I think that, you know, he's not hard against it either. And so, yeah, he'd be more moderate compared to most of our politicians. And obviously you see a lot of the foreign relations politicians, people are Christian, or at least identify as Christian. And so, yeah, no, that's absolutely a great point. And Vivek he's not super big on foreign policy. Sure. I'd say that one of the bigger differences that his religion makes, like, yes, he has this American upbringing in Ohio. However, he is a very, like, Christianized Hindu, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So he would even identify as a monotheist as opposed to worshiping 300 million deities, like most Hindus do. But what we see at the end of the day is he likes to reference these Ten Commandments, because that's what he's raised around, is this unintentionally Christian culture. And he's raised around those, and those principles affected him and affected his morals. And so he's kind of been forced to step back and become more Christianized. However, I still think that there's something deep at the core about religion. Religion is something that, if it's part of you, if you're a religious person, then it's every aspect of your life is influenced by it. And so I think what we begin to see with people like Vivek is that he begin to falter on a lot of things. Like, abortion, to me, is the biggest political thing we're dealing with right now. To him, I don't even know. I've heard him say one or two things about it. Right?
I'm pretty sure he's pro-life.
He is pro-life. Yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. But
it's not like a front center.
It's not a strong position.
Position, though.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. He's not a huge social con. Right. But neither is, like, Trump or
100%. Well, is Trump a Christian?
Yeah, yeah. You know? Yeah, I mean, Mitt Romney was a Mormon, right?
Right.
And pro-life, but probably would never have done anything to ban abortion nationally or anything like that, right? So, like, where do we, what is it about his identity from the cultural milieu that would disqualify him Is it just his identity, or does it matter what he actually thinks?
I mean, I think it's definitely both. Like for me, if I were to, you know, if I could choose anybody in our entire governmental sphere to elect to be like, you know, dictator of the United States, they can pass whatever policies they want. Not that I'm pro dictatorship, but it would not be somebody like Vivek, and it wouldn't also be all these Christian senators that we have that, you know, profess to be Christian and then do a bunch of unchristian things or don't put Christian policies at the forefront of their thing. And so like with Vivek, he believes that American identity is strictly about the free market, equal opportunity, freedom, and all these things are key American values. Don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But that to him is the most important thing about America. Mm-hmm. And so he will throw everything else out the window, any identity we have, any culture that we have. He will tolerate abortion if it means that he can have, you know, his perfect free market America and the American dream.
Okay, so to be clear, if you had a Christian who was pro-choice, he would also be disqualified because he doesn't have the right Christian view on abortion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think any Christian is pro-choice. I think that, I mean, you can say you're a Christian. Uh-huh. If you really think that murdering other humans is okay under any circumstance, I would argue that's very, very unchristian. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, if somebody...
But they have the title. I mean, it's like that's right. What they claim.
Right. Sure.
And they were raised in a Christian church. They have all the other values, but they make an exception on that one.
Well, and it's also, like you said, there's a lot of politicians out there that are kind of LARPing as Christians, right. But there's like, are they actually living the Christian values? Like, is it core to their axiomatic values that they're actually following? And you're, you know, claiming that a lot of them are just kind of LARPing, right?
Yeah, I mean, it gets you votes. That's what Vivek does, is he kind of LARPs. He LARPs as a Christian. Like, yeah, if you ask him, he's Hindu. But mm-hmm. if you listen to him speak, you listen to him talk about faith, God, prayer. You know, what does he say to me? He says, keep praying. Mm-hmm. He says all these phrases that you'd expect to hear from a Christian or a religious person. But when you say those things in America... When you talk about God in America, typically you are referring to the Christian God. Mm-hmm. And so he intentionally uses these words and these phrases to LARP as a Christian. So I would throw him in the same boat. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't vote for somebody just because they have the title of Christian.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I obviously can't look at somebody and say, oh, you're a true Christian. Oh, you're not a true Christian. That's between them and God alone. However, I can look at the policies that they're making. And I can say, well, I'm 99.9% sure you're not a Christian, because if you're not going to die on this issue, you know, you're not representing God.
How does Trump fit into your worldview? Because this has always been a critique, is that he's kind of like, you know, this former Democrat, quite liberal, like 90s Democrat. He's not really a Christian. He's not like outwardly about it. You know, he'll make references and speeches every now and then or whatever, but he's not like a devout reading the Bible type of Christian. How does he fit into kind of... where you're standing here?
Yeah, absolutely. So I view Trump the kind of the same way I view the GOP. There's a lot of issues with both of them, especially from a Christian's perspective. However, right now they are a necessary almost tool for us to be using. And the way I view Trump, the way I view kind of a lot of the stuff he's been doing, is that he is going to represent Christianity better than anyone else in our government, or than any other options for president. And he is an outwardly professing Christian, which, as we just discussed, is different from actually being a Christian. Mm-hmm. However, most of his policies are representative of that. The people that he's going to appoint are also going to be representative of that. And so Trump, I see as, you know, a short-term solution. Here's somebody that we can put in office that is not going to go absolutely insane and allow a bunch of things that we don't want. Because, we saw a bunch of weak conservatives kind of begin to just shift along with the Overton window and allow America to become culturally and politically more and more liberal. And our party just shifted with that, and mm-hmm. our culture just shifted with that. And so Trump, I see as a counter to that and a stepping stone to the future, right? He has paved the way for somebody like J.D. Vance to step in the office, hopefully, in 2028.
Hmm. You're looking at J.D. Vance. Is he kind of like the guy that you really hope to be in?
Realistically speaking, I think. I mean, last night he blew me away. I was really, really impressed with, I don't know if you saw any clips.
At the Turning Point event?
Yeah, it was a Turning Point event, and he was talking about the foundations of this country. The only thing that I would have had an issue with his answer was, you know, his take on abortion, which is a huge policy thing for me, as I said. However, I think getting somebody like him in there is absolutely key to advancing, you know, Christian ideas being pushed in government. He's still going to fight really hard against abortion, just not as hard as somebody like me would like. But yeah.
There's probably a problem there too, just politically, is the abortion issue has been in a lot of ways a religious symbol for the left, and a lot of the country in itself has just went in that direction. So that's a very difficult, I imagine, even if you are just like 100% devoutly pro-life, it's probably, if you're a politician in J.D. Vance's shoes or anybody in that type of shoes, like, that's a difficult fight to probably be had, because the left in a lot of ways won the fight, in a sense, at least in the minds of current generations in power. Like, it's probably going to take future generations to kind of pull back that and have conservatives or whatever this new movement is. Like, I don't know if we would, do we call this conservative anymore? Like, I don't know.
What are we even conserving at this point?
You know? Well, that's the kind of the thing, is like the conservatives were always just conserving whatever the left won a decade prior, you know, like that's kind of been the dynamic of conservatism at this point.
Right.
I have a quick question about your thoughts on Vance with his wife not being Christian. Like, she's Hindu. So does that, I don't know, kind of not disqualify him in a sense?
Yeah. So we actually addressed this last night, and I'm really glad you brought this up, because I just want to give him this like a second of air. This is great. He was asked about this, and he actually revealed that, so when him and his wife met, they were agnostic. They're both agnostic. Now he would identify as a devout Catholic. They're raising their kids Christian, but most importantly, she's actually, according to him, been coming to church with them recently. So obviously not ideal, but that doesn't make him not the man anymore, for the man for the job in 2020 anymore. I think that she is actually Christianized, according to him at least. She's been okay with her kids being Christian. And so I think that that is not something that would even disqualify him, even if it is true. I mean, obviously women have a lot of influence on the men that they're married to, in power, but we actually are seeing a lot of growth from her, at least according to him. So, yeah.
There's an assimilation that's happening. Like, she's becoming more Christian. That's fine.
100%. Right? Yeah. She's assimilating. Exactly.
Doesn't matter if she's like former Hindu or whatever, just as long as she's assimilating into what you deem kind of the correct cultural milieu, which is like this Christian idealism for the country.
Yeah, her past is irrelevant. Mm-hmm. I mean, what matters is that she repents and turns to Christ. This isn't a racial issue or a background issue. It's a, who are you now?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, let me clarify that, because you did say that it was Vivek's background, and you said he was Indian and Hindu.
Sure.
So help me understand that.
Yeah, connection. Totally fair. That's a fair point. So his background, which he still holds with him to this day, right? Mm. He's a Hindu, I'd argue a Hindu purely because his background. Because what we see from him,
he was raised Hindu.
Hindu. Yeah, yeah. And he's a very Christianized person, a Christianized Hindu. And so I think if he had been raised atheist or agnostic, he'd probably be a Christian right now. But he was raised Hindu, and so he's going to be this Hindu who worships Vishnu or Krishna, whoever it is. I don't know. He has like one main Hindu god. And so he's like, he represents a lot of Christian cultural traits and personality traits and even belief systems. However, he's still identifying as a Hindu, still worshiping a demon, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so that's because of his background, if that makes sense. That's kind of what I'm talking about there.
Yeah, he's like Christian inspired, but he's still like he personally still identifies as a Hindu.
Yeah.
So kind of.
It's really the metaphysical part that you're most concerned about, even if he has the right view. So say, for example, he was even more radical maybe he was the best non-interventionist, America first foreign policy, right? Mm-hmm. And had the best, you know, trade policy, and had the best pro-life policy. What are the other policies you would look to? And then he would be able to get to 100%, or is that just not possible because of the identity?
Yeah, like to kind of reach Trump status, you mean?
Yeah.
He would have to... See, I think it's a hard question. Like, the things that I would want to see, right? And he won't. I genuinely just don't believe that there is an example of this that exists. It's a very theoretical idea, but
yeah. Like, I'm giving you theory,
right? Sure, yeah. And it like just totally hard on abortion. Like if he wants to be a Hindu and be in an American government and represent Christian people and represent Christian values like he claims to, I want to see from somebody who's not even claiming to be spiritually aligned with Christianity, he would have to be so hard on everything. So I want him to be an insane, like, radical on abortion, an insane radical on gay rights, transgenderism. And so absurd radicalism. Still, I have an issue with him being open and identifying with being, with worshiping another God. And so, like, at least the Christians who are LARPing, at least they are going to be held to Christian standards because of what they say. And at least they kind of speak about Christianity. you're never going to get that out of Vivek unless you repent.
They're at least LARPing is the correct thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah. Like literally they're at least like, LARPing. And once again, I'm not advocating for that LARPing.
No, it's awful. I get it. Yeah. This is how it is in politics. Yeah. It's like the best you can often ask is like, well, at least he's saying the right thing. I don't know if he actually believes it, but at least he's telling me what I need to hear in order to have some amount of hope that he will do the right thing.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I get what you mean. So tell me what's the Christian perspective on gay rights at this moment then? Like, what is the, like you mentioned that he had to be a radical in that space. So I think I understand what radical and abortion would be. It'd be a national abortion ban, right?
Right. Yeah.
Is there further than that? It would be
I would identify public executions with like abolitionism, not public execution, okay. but criminalization.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, you know, that's something we're going to reach in 250 years. We're not ready to have that discussion yet. Like America, America isn't ready to have that discussion. I'm happy to have that
for
discussion.
For the women who get abortions?
Yeah, so criminalization.
Or the doctors,
so it would be doctors, anybody involved. That would be the super radical stance. And I'm not even the most radical. I know some people who are like, oh, we can't even associate with Catholics or vote for them because they're not going to be hard enough on abortion. There's this weird, complicated theological thing that basically Catholics are a little less hard on abortion than hard on Protestants. Abortion rabbit hole goes deep.
Right? Okay, yeah. Give me the gay rights version of that. Like, okay. What's the gay rights radical position?
So,
or even actually start with the most, like the position you'd be willing to accept, and then like where the furthest position would be, that would be a hard signal for you that this is a gangster. He's a good guy from your point of view.
So the position I'd be willing to accept would just be a ban on gay marriage. Just like it's not something that is going to, or not a ban, but it's not legally recognized by the state anymore. So overturning Obergefell, which, you know, we're seeing, a recent poll, obviously polls are not always spot on, but a poll that came out, I think it was like yesterday, said that public approval for Obergefell has dropped to less than 55% among Americans, which I thought was really interesting, because I did not realize that we had advanced that much. I thought that was still a really controversial issue.
Yeah, I'd be careful with any poll.
Yeah,
on Supreme Court decisions, because usually the salience is about 0.001%. So literally asking 1,000 people and 10 people like, oh, I know what that is. I disapprove of it. You know, or they just go I don't like the word, and so I'm saying I oppose it.
No,
like, that's of course, be careful with that one.
I would love to be optimistic about it, but obviously it's a poll. Yeah. A poll's a poll.
Still, like accurate. even if the majority public was not in favor of gay marriage at this point, you believe the government should ban it. It should be like you can't be recognized by the
state.
Would you be okay with civil arrangements where people can make civil contracts to share property and such?
It's more so like, if I'm understanding correctly, it's more so like the state's involvement in the practice of marriage, in a sense.
No, the practice of gay marriage.
Yeah. Right, sure. But, well, both. Like, I mean, so, people are free to make the civil agreements that they want.
Yeah.
But the government would not be like overseeing that in any way. So like the certain tax statuses that are given to married people, which is how this issue first came up, because originally homosexual people were just making kind of agreements, right? As you said, and then it became a Supreme Court case. We want to get married because it was something with taxes, right?
Well, the original, if I remember correctly, like we didn't even start having marriage licenses as a whole, like even for just like straight couples until like the 1920s.
Right.
Like it's kind of a new phenomenon in America. Like it's only in the last 100 years. And, you know, there could be an argument if you wanted to kind of push back against the gay marriage thing and everything just kind of went into like, you know, straight couples, they get married through their church and like, you know, there might be civil unions that happen with gay couples or whatever, but it's not this like everybody's getting these tax status, you know, benefits coming from this.
Yeah,
and I think that's what gay marriage comes down to. So the position I accept is, okay, we're no longer going to acknowledge that. The position that would be completely ideal for me is same deal, where it's like you would criminalize any government involvement. So if the government, if some like local government was deciding, we don't like that, so we're still going to recognize it, then that would be something that government was punished for, that local magistrate would be punished for. But like, I mean, that I feel like that's kind of as far as you can go. There's not really much more. Like, I'm not gonna call for like just killing people because they're gay.
Okay. All right. Not going that far. All right. So like ending gay marriage, in far as like the trans thing, I think like there's like universal center right agreement on children not being subject to gender transition stuff. I almost said therapies, just on the habit of how you read it all the time. They're like, I don't know. That's not the right word.
Yeah.
So I'm just going with stuff. But what about adults?
The more direct word, stuff.
Yeah, yeah, stuff. Yeah. All that whateverness.
All that jazz.
Yeah, right.
So, yeah, yeah. So my view with adults, I don't know, it's complicated. I struggle with this because I still think that there's absolutely moral wrong no matter how old you are. Mm-hmm. But obviously we're not just going to shut down people's right to believe. So like no thought crime. There's not ever going to be thought crime. But this kind of idea that we're going to legalize all these drugs, all the drugs that are involved with this that have been proven to, you know, have all these side effects. I think those are a huge, huge thing. Obviously among kids, like if you were caught even like introducing the agenda, like this is the radical position once again, like introducing this mm-hmm. agenda, the LGBTQ stuff to kids, it would be like very, very severely prosecuted. And, you know, this is something I'm very, very concerned with because if you look at, you know, especially suicide rates within that community, I think it's evil, like pure evil to involve a kid with that. Mm.
How do you distinguish that from speech? Sorry.
From
protected speech.
Right. So I think that introducing something like that to a child through like an organization, I think is very different. So, I mean, the first thing obviously would be schools. Public, private, I don't care. You can't be introducing these kids to these things to the kids. So yeah, I see what you're saying. While it does seem like a ban on speech, but it's more. It's like it's a pushing an ideology that is like actively dangerous to people's lives.
Yeah, I mean the steel man is obviously pedophilia,
right?
It's like as an analogy, right? Yeah. That pedophilia is something that itself is something we say like it's not speech. Never can be speech. It doesn't matter if you get a group together who are saying we're the pedophiles together, like the whole society is going to condemn you and we're going to not allow you to do.
I don't have much faith in that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's called Epstein's Island. Is that what you're going to say? Yeah.
They're minor attracted persons, dude.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah. But that's still a minority position and it's ostracized and thought like that social standing is one thing. But the beyond that is like where you're involving the government and how you involve the government. That's a different sort of thing.
Right? And that's what I was going to ask is like, how do you distinguish the difference between like your cultural values versus what the state should do to impact the culture? So it's like I would agree with you, especially on the cultural side, is like I think a lot of the veneration and adoration of like the LGBTQ community and like just like the pushing of the trans kind of propaganda and like the not even just like the tolerance is one thing, but like the almost forced acceptance that is coming, I think it's like incredibly damaging for the culture. But then where I get a little hairy is like, where should the state actually intervene in that? Like, what is the line of intervening in that in the cultural aspect? Like, where do you distinguish that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it depends on what it is and what's going on. So like mm-hmm. for something like transgenderism, where you actually end up getting a lot of pedophilia involved with that.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, the LGBTQ movement, at least the radical parts of it, as we were just joking about, has now accepted minor attracted persons as part of that. This is obviously a very controversial thing that has been talked about for a while, but the rates are simply just higher. And so I think that we would step in when it comes to involvement with kids. We're not going to prevent people from speaking. Like, you know, if you really want to have you know, your thoughts, and you think a man can be a woman can be a man, whatever, you're more than welcome to preach that from the street corner. But when you begin to preach it to kids, and when I say that, I mean like actively in an organization with youth involved, so mm-hmm. a private school, obviously public school, summer camp, whatever it is, some Boy Scouts, yeah, right, exactly.
The books they're supposed to read, yeah. And kind of like. There's like a line.
The library book thing. The, yeah. Yeah, all that jazz.
Yeah, right. Yeah, public library. Absolutely. Yeah. And even a private library where it's like in the kids section. It's like that's where it begins to become something that's seriously dangerous. Like, you know, it's illegal to incite violence. I would argue that you're causing the same effect as inciting violence. Mm. You know?
So you said a couple times now. And I'm going to ask this because I'm not doubting your commitment to free speech, mm-hmm. but I'm wondering about the philosophical implications. So if the current mode is no longer conservatism, right? If you define conservatism as what we're trying to conserve are the principles of the founding and the institutions of the West, mm-hmm. right? That of which 1776 is best articulated by the founding documents and by, you know, all the things that we point to when we're looking at these things, right? If it's not that, instead it's Christianity, and maybe like Christian nationalism as like the words we're going to use, then why not censorship? Right? Because the institutions of the West aren't the same thing as just that. That's a little bit Venn diagram, right? Right. Mm-hmm. It's a big circle, like, and then Christian nationalism is
Venn diagrams.
Yeah, it's a slightly smaller circle that is Christian nationalism that sits within that. There's obviously principles that are there, but I don't see why. I don't see a philosophical reason. I'd like to hear from you.
There's a lot of overlap, but it's not like perfectly.
Yeah. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Why censorship would be in that category? Because blasphemy laws are a tradition of Western Christendom. Mm-hmm. That go back centuries,
yeah,
and are have been mainstream for a very long time. So why would you wind up in that free speech?
So I think I absolutely agree with like the Venn diagram. There are certain Western principles. I would argue even a majority of Western principles come from Christianity. And so I think that I am a full believer in it. And most of the Christian nationalist people I know are full believers in upholding the Constitution. I'm not asking to start violating the first 10 amendments. I'm not asking to rewrite the Constitution. I'm just saying that there are certain, like, it's been misinterpreted. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen that, right? And in terms of blasphemy laws, like, we see even in America, not just throughout Christendom prior to America, but even in America, this state that apparently has no religious identity, Thomas Jefferson, who also is apparently, like, doesn't care about Christianity, he tried to implement Sabbath laws. I don't know if you're familiar, in Virginia, mm-hmm. Where he attempted to essentially criminalize working on Sunday. That's, you know, an incredibly Christian idea. It's something he pulled from Europe. And so even him, the least Christian, the only non-Christian who signed the Declaration of Independence, was trying to impose these Christian laws. And he didn't see how that contradicts with the First Amendment.
Well, especially at the state level. Of course, the states have much wider range of action that they can do under the Constitution, right? Mm-hmm. But should a state be able to pass a blasphemy law?
I think so. Individual states, absolutely, yeah, if they want to. Like, I'm a blue laws guy. Like, I love going into a town and there's like nothing open on Sunday. It's great. It's good. It's just like, it feels great. You know, it's just a weird vibe thing for me.
Okay, all right.
It tells you the culture of the town too.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's kind of a cultural vibe that exists there.
I don't know, man. I've been in small towns after a rodeo weekend and I'm hungover and I really want to find a coffee spot and none of them are open on Sunday. That's brutal.
Yeah. If I'm traveling through a small town, I'm like, wait, nobody's open. It'll be a bit surprising.
Just play. Yeah. Keep going. Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. So I think that the government is not just going to say, well, okay, you legally have to be Christian. But it'll affirm Christianity, it'll affirm Christian belief. So the government can say you should be a Christian. The government can say, you should keep the Sabbath. You shouldn't have these beliefs, and all at the same time uphold the values of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers.
All right, let me put you through a question that I always have when it comes to this. So, if you say, for example, you're the mayor of Bozeman, right?
Yeah,
yeah, where we're at, and you're like, you implement the Sabbath law here in Bozeman, and someone says, "No, I'm not going to do that. I'm gonna stay open. I need the money." Would you yourself go down to the store with a gun and kidnap them and put them into a cell for doing that?
Like, as the mayor?
No. He's
saying the police,
so,
right?
So would I send some form of...
No, like, I'm not saying you yourself.
Like, literally, would I?
No, I'm not saying that's your role as mayor. So once again, I'm trying to touch on the philosophy here.
Right.
Right. So this is the idea that even if you told a police officer to do it, it's not different than you doing it.
Right. Sure.
Yeah. So
I'm just making, like, I wasn't sure if you were like questioning my own like character or...
No. I would never do that. No. I'm just saying there's... It's almost the most important philosophical question in the use of force. Is would you be willing to do that when we're questioning it? It's one thing to say an abstract, it will pass a law.
Yeah.
And then, well, it does end up having to be enforced.
Right. Well, that's what we see with blue laws, right?
Yeah. So would you be willing to do that? And you would do that and you would say that makes you Christian.
Look, I wouldn't put him behind bars. Because that's not the punishment that I would instate for a Sabbath law. Right?
Okay. What would you do?
I would place a fine, maybe on a second offense. An excessive tax on that business or some form of restriction on that business.
And they refuse to pay the tax.
Right. So that's when you get force involved. And obviously it's like very controversial. It's okay, are we then stealing from that person?
Mm-hmm. No. At that point, they say, I won't pay the tax. I won't pay the fine. I won't do anything.
Yeah.
And then because we're in a Christian nationalist country and he can't go to the courts because the courts will agree with you, mm-hmm. he goes to prison.
Yeah.
Is there a difference between you putting him in prison and just doing it through the extra steps of the fine and then the tax and then going through that. Is there a difference?
I think there's a difference to give him kind of the warnings, but yeah, I would still still same end, right, where he ends up in prison for violating the law.
Violating the Sabbath law that you passed that says he can't do law.
Of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not like a law that keeps him from transing a kid, right?
Right.
It's a law that says he can't operate his business on a day.
Yeah, it's a law that says, okay, hey, you can be Hindu, you can be atheist, you can be Muslim, whatever. However, this is how we behave in America. This mm-hmm. is, these are the values we uphold in America, and you are expected to follow them. And I know that you don't have any personal moral conscience that says follow this law. Mm-hmm. And this specific law, I'm not saying that people who aren't Christian have no moral conscience. I'm saying that he doesn't have the moral conscience to obey the Christian Sabbath. And so that's okay. I don't expect you to have that moral conscience. And so we're going to make it a law to enforce that.
And I imagine because you're defining yourself as a Christian nationalist, it's kind of like, you know, as a Christian nationalist country, we have a certain identity. This is how we do things here. If you're not going to do those things here, then it's kind of like, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
Right.
Why it's do people,
probably your attitude?
Yeah.
I imagine.
And we see this even among the secular, like kind of anti-immigration crowd, which is like, okay, if you're going to come to Europe, right? We see this in Europe a lot and still be a Muslim and you want to impose Sharia law. Why are you in Europe in the first place? You got Sharia law in, you know, 40 countries back home.
Which is actually kind of how like Muslim countries operate. Like they have their standard, especially the ones that are more prosperous, not the ones like mm-hmm. ravaged by terrorism.
Yeah.
But like where they have like...
Or us.
This is kind of how...
Exactly, us. Yeah.
Right.
Also that. Everybody, us, Europe, everybody's all in that
Muslim
pie
country,
there.
Yeah.
Where they kind of like, this is the way we do things. If you're an outsider, there'll be a jizya tax on you, which is just kind of like for non-Muslims, you kind of have this extra tax, but otherwise you can kind of partake in what we're doing. That is kind of how a lot of the regular Muslim countries tend to operate, which is you're kind of just like, we do something kind of similar to that, but the Christian version.
Right. And we won't impose like that tax, the jizya, is that how you pronounce
it? Yeah.
And that's, I think, existed since like the Ottoman Empire or something like that when they were, you know, experimenting with religious tolerance in that time. So we wouldn't impose that. We wouldn't impose a tax for not being Christian, as I said. Like, it would be fines for violating the Christian
laws. We'd have like our own version of that kind of, though,
right,
to kind of like keep our identity and our principle in place.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right.
Yeah. I want to shift a little bit of gears here. We've talked a lot about what you believe in kind of the Christian nationalism, but I also want to get a vibe on kind of where are people your age at? Like, just you being a high schooler and, you know, operating in the world, where is like the average high schools seem to be standing? Where is their political wind starting to shift? Who's influencing them? Those types of questions.
Before you answer, can I just address that you're drinking a soda and we did not give the high schooler alcohol?
We are very crystal clear about that. It is a soda.
I bought soda just for this moment. Just for him.
I just wanted to make that clear.
That's a good clarification.
I think it's all over. Culturally, I would describe our generation as right-leaning. But it's not aligned with me. So I think you also have a bunch of radical leftists. So we have, you know, a large number, I would say a concerning number, of kids that are transgender or kind of like goth, but like goth has kind of evolved from since you guys were kids. It's more
goth's
like,
back.
goth is back, but it's worse than you could ever imagine.
Oh no,
it's not heavy metal anymore. I mean, maybe they still is. I think they call it like punk now, or you guys still have, you had punk when you guys were kids, but
don't talk like that. No, stop it. You made me feel very old. You guys had punk when you were kids. Yeah, we did. My parents had punk.
Oh my god, ew, no, but you know that group is like a percentage, like 1-2% of kids, and that's in Bozeman, Montana. So you know that's unrealistic sample size. It's going to be higher in other places.
You also probably get a vibe just because of the internet. Like you're probably connected to communities that are.
Yeah.
You know, your age group.
That's true. Most of the communities I'm connected with that are my age group are like people who like are just theologically the same as me.
Yeah, you're probably in kind of the Christian communities, right?
But I'd say so you get that group, and then you have, and this is a majority of the young men, I would say, people who kind of just are they're angry at the system and they can't really put a finger on it. They're not Christian. Maybe they're raised Christian, maybe they go to an evangelical church every Sunday. They don't have a super strong foundation politically, but they're tired of the nonsense. And you especially see this with the young white men, right? It's like when your entire history curriculum ever since elementary school has been about MLK Jr. and slavery and the Civil Rights Act and how white people are terrible and how Christopher Columbus, no, it's, we don't celebrate him anymore. It's indigenous people to stay, right? Then there's no like celebration of your culture or heritage. And these kids, if you said that to them, they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, that kind of makes sense. But they're not actively thinking it. They just, I think subconsciously, that entire like 10 years of propaganda has created a lot of resentment towards left-wing ideologies. And unfortunately, I think the fruit of that is kind of people who are just flat-out racist a lot of the time. And we're seeing that with the kind of rise of like, you know, Groypers or whatever. We love our Groypers, but, you know, they're racist.
Well, I think they disagree with you on J.D. Vance, on the racial category just because his wife is Indian.
Right, exactly. And we see that. It's like, okay, so you're going to vote for Gavin Newsom? Really, man?
Like, well, you even see Nick. Like, that's actually what we're planning on covering after this is the Nick Fuentes and Tucker Carlson podcast.
Yeah.
That's what we prepared for our current event show. But you kind of see that where Nick himself is kind of moderating himself quite a bit, because I think even he's like, some of my fans, they're just going way too far with some of this stuff, you know, like there's a line that he's trying to draw now, it feels like.
Right. And so I think like, and kids my age haven't grasped onto Nick yet, but I think they will. And like,
oh really,
when they're in college or somebody like him.
Well, actually there's maybe a good question there.
Like, the difference between high school or in college might be that.
Yeah. How politically aware are, because you're probably an anomaly. I was like that too. When I was in high school, I was starting to really pay attention to politics during the Romney Obama election. I was paying a lot of attention in kind of my junior, senior year of high school, but like I was an anomaly. Like I didn't talk about politics with my friends necessarily because they weren't paying attention to it. Like how, but also that being said, the internet's so much more explosive now where like kids are a little bit more tapped in, I imagine. So like, where is the general awareness?
Yeah, right, you get some people that are tapped in. Everybody knows what's happening. So like when the government shutdown happened, I'm kind of like, obviously, as you said, an outlier, more politically aware. And so when the government shutdown happened, everybody's like, oh, Jeremy, I heard about the government shutdown. Like, explain it. Like, and so.
Oh, you're that kid where everybody's like, oh, yeah.
A little bit.
I feel you, brother. I know what that life is like. Yeah.
And so the more politically informed kids are the radical people. Like, I mean, I hate to say it, but I would probably be more radical person, as much as I vote for my ideas to be mainstream. You know, I'm further to the right than most of the right.
Obviously, I think.
And so the people who are most politically aware are the most radical. So the other people that I would throw in that group would be like the transgender kids are super politically aware. They'd probably be behind me if I would like make a rank of like, or like a tier list or whatever of like who is the most politically informed. Like it'd be like me and then a bunch of like trans kids and goths who are like, you know, wearing their gay pride flag pins, whatever. And so I think I think those guys would be super politically informed. Most people kind of know what's happening, but they're not super politically educated. They've had a lot of indoctrination from public school system that kind of gives them a predisposition on anything that they hear. So it's like, you know, my teacher today, like he actively said something about January 6th. We were talking about civil disobedience. This was in my history class. And I raised my hand I didn't raise my hand. I just called out. I was like, oh, just, you know, there's 274 FBI agents there, according to Kash Patel. And he was like, well, yeah, but six people still died. And so my point is like, they're not like teachers, even in Bozeman, aren't afraid to cover those topics, talk about those things in a negative light. And so I think there's a massive disposition. Everybody just immediately hears Trump. He's like, oh, that racist pig did something again, you know, like, and that's naturally occurring. However, I think that like people know what's happening. They don't really have strong positions built yet.
Yeah. So, but then you also said that the vibe, there is a vibe shift that seems to be leaning right wing, but it's just like, at this point, it's like they're feeling the vibes, but they're not necessarily politically aware. It's just like, there's like a cultural vibe, right?
That's what I want to ask. Is it cooler to be right wing now?
Yeah. I mean, so the kids that would identify in like the goth LGBTQ group, whatever, they are culturally on the fringe. Like they don't get bullied. But people talk about them and are like, you know, you'll never believe what XYZ was doing in my class today. Or like, look at that clown not standing for the Pledge of Allegiance, you know, whatever it is. Right. Which I always find so funny, by the way, because it's like the reason that you're able to sit for the Pledge of Allegiance is because of the Pledge of Allegiance. So like, but anyways, that's a whole other conversation. But yeah, culturally, like it's cooler to drive trucks, play football, whatever. And that's always existed.
Yeah.
But it's cooler to be like a masculine guy. Like, it's cooler to just be a guy's guy. It's cooler to be, you know,
based.
An American girl. You know, and, yeah. and I have my critiques of that, like the Sidney Sweeney kind of conservatism. Like, that's popular, if you know what I mean.
Oh, no, I have no idea what you mean. What do you mean?
Well, do you remember the Sidney Sweeney?
The jeans.
The jeans,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
It's like that is
a good jeans.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. That is a perfect analogy, like, explanation for what the political mm-hmm. culture is. Is like, people are like, oh, yeah, like, blonde hair, blue eyes, sexual degeneracy, but, you know, this is what it means to be conservative.
I mentioned,
well, like, I mean, wait a minute. So is it a bad thing? It's not a.
I would say it's bad.
Yeah. Obese black transgender person doing the same thing.
I think you're probably more concerned as like a Christian. You're probably like the heat. There's like a hedonistic vibe that you're more concerned with.
But
on the entertainment side, like, there's kind of like entertainers. Like, this is even kind of away from politics, where there's like your right wing coded entertainers and your left wing coded entertainers. Mm-hmm. I imagine the people that you're kind of like the vibe is. It's like they're shifting towards the Sidney Sweeneys and towards, like, I don't know, the comedians that are a little bit more right wing coded.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Like Taylor Swift would be out.
Would be like Shane a left wing coded. Yes.
That's a great way to put it.
I can only think of Shane Gillis when you keep bringing up the goths because of his latest special.
Like, oh, I haven't seen it.
I don't think I've seen it.
He talks about an Australian goth made fun of him. That's all I can think about.
Because it is a weird thing where it's like, you know, it just feels like if you just go on the internet, it seems like Sidney Sweeney is right wing, Taylor Swift is left wing. And they're not even like, it isn't even necessarily like.
Taylor Swift is kind of actually political, but Sidney Sweeney has no politics.
She shows up to talk about politics when she's kind of like probably paid to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Sidney Sweeney hasn't really done that, but she's still coded that way because of. Well, I think it's a reaction.
She has good genes.
Well, and it's like, so there's some genetic, like, you know, eugenic thing going on there. But is what the left is sensing in that, and obviously that they're poking at. But the it's mostly the we're not doing the obese, trans, black person selling our genes thing anymore. That's what codes it right. It has nothing to do with what she says or even who she is. It's just, we're just not doing that.
Yeah, as far as I know, she's never even said anything.
No, I bet she's a liberal. But
I would too, based on the fact that she's Hollywood.
I remember there being a story that she voted for Trump in 2020.
She got heat in, like, it was a while ago, it was like 2022 or something, because she, like, well, a bunch of like conservatives were like, yay, because she like posted on her Instagram her with like her family for Christmas, like normal things that people do. That everybody's like,
conservatives are so thirsty for
that's
a cultural.
Right, that's right wing coded. That's a right wing coded thing, right?
To be there with your, you know, you're all white. Not that that is relevant, but it is. It subconsciously signals stuff to a lot of people. You're all white family on Thanksgiving and, you know, or Christmas, whatever it was. I don't remember. You know, and so she's posting that, and everybody's like, oh, when. So that's a good way to put the cultural climate. I think it's very, like, at least in high school, it's very subconscious. Now, when you get up to a college level, I interact with a lot of college kids at work, and they are all, like, super, super far right. Like, they will have, like, as I was just joking about earlier, like, we'll have a late close, and they'll literally, in order to get us, like, to get us excited, yeah, they'll play Alexander Ross. Exactly. And I'm not even joking, like, this is something that happens. I would say Alexander Ross gets played more often than it doesn't.
it could be a Kanye song, you know.
Exactly. And I remember the first night I heard it, I was like, you guys know what this song means, right? And they were like, and the two guys, the one guy that was on Ox, and his friend were like, oh, he's a knower. He's a knower. Yeah, it's great. It's hilarious. And so, like, these guys, I think you get a lot of racists. I think also with working in the food industry, I think it'll naturally produce that. Like, totally normal guys, raised liberal, they're in a state university, and they deal with Indian DoorDash drivers in Bozeman, Montana, who don't speak English, and they just come up to you and they, like, put the phone in your face and they're like, where's my order? And, you know, or they just say some gibberish. And naturally, I think that angers these people. I think when these young men look, they're in college, they're paying $30,000 a year for a propaganda education a lot of the time. They're looking to get out of that, buy a house. Well, they can't buy a house. You know, and for a million reasons, but arguably, I mean, I would point the finger at liberals for our housing crisis. I mean, obviously conservatives have made some major housing policy issues, but I think at the end of the day, supply and demand, the fact that we've imported 100 million people here between visas and illegal immigration probably isn't helping the housing market either. And so I think that naturally produces a right-wing sentiment among college students, the college students especially. I think when you get to college and you're in that financial situation, you're working, you're interacting with people who, like, because of the fact that they're culturally different, it's very unpleasant to kind of deal with them. And once again, I want to stress, it's not racial, it's cultural. But a lot of the time, these guys, because they're not, I don't think they have a grounding faith or grounding moral values, they often resort to racism. And that's why you see people like Fuentes on their eyes.
There's a Venn diagram that exists between the culture and the race thing. And then a lot of people just kind of lean into the race thing, right? Because that's like a very identifiable feature because you're seeing it with your eyes. And that's probably what's happening. Well, but our culture, there's like a culture.
Yeah, we lean into it. We call it blacks.
Yeah.
Like, to refer to Africans and former slaves and people from Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
You know, so like it's all one thing. And we just kind of call it by the racial category.
What would you say are the... like among people of your age are like the major issues that they seem to care about, like when they are talking about politics or what they're like kind of looking at?
Yeah. I mean, they're really into financial policy. I think it depends where you're at once.
Really?
Like the high school guys are really into, like, the people who do care about politics are in immigration, because that's like, I think it's kind of the entry, the gateway drug.
It's the big issue of the time too.
It's like, yeah, I remember what got me when I started really getting into politics, like 2017 or something, 2016. It was like, Trump is going to deport all the Mexicans, and that's why I want to vote for him. And that's kind of what, that's like the gateway drug. So I think immigration is kind of the gateway drug because it's so prevalent. And such a big thing that people talk about too, very controversial. And so the younger guys, immigration. And then for the older guys, yeah, I think like economics are a huge part of it. It's like, okay, how much of my money is going to come out of my paycheck every single week? Mm-hmm. Because we have to go do foreign aid, because we have to have welfare, whatever it is. How much is tuition going to cost me because of all, you know, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think, honestly, just because it affects their lives so much, because we have a really bad economic environment, I think, for younger people right now, I think economic stuff is really what excites the older guys, college guys.
Kind of echoing on that too, how are you and your peers thinking about college? Because like, it seems like, at least when I was your age, which is 13 years ago or whatever, going into college, you know, it was kind of like, you have to do this, it's the thing you have to do. But it feels like people are not as interested in college anymore. Like, where are people feeling with that right now?
Yeah, there's a huge pushback. I mean, I know myself, like, if I have an opportunity where I can skip college and still kind of pursue what I'm interested in, I absolutely will. Most people I know, what's kind of cool, like literally what's cool to do right now is not to go to Yale, Harvard, or to MSU, whatever it is, go play college football. That's not really what's cool right now. What's cool is going to trade school.
Really?
And like starting an electrician practice or whatever. Like one of my coworkers who's at MSU for a while, just recently dropped out. He's gonna go do an apprenticeship as an electrician, and then eventually he wants to start his own electrician business, and then maybe finish college when he has like a surplus amount of money. But I think people look at the marginal benefit that they get from college, like, how much am I paying? How much of my life am I giving to these people, and what am I actually getting? If you look at like the economics of going to trade school or getting a is it GED? Is that what you call it when you get like a kind of like? It's like
that's a high school diploma.
Yeah, it's like a high school diploma, but it's like there's a way you can do it. It's like kind of trades focused. Anyways,
yeah. But as far as like get to trade skill, is better because you make money as you're doing it, right? You're actually working as an apprentice.
And trades are what's cool. Trades are what the kids are doing.
Yeah, because I'm feeling from what you're saying right now, it's feeling like, especially among men your age, there's this vibe that things are off while you're in high school when you're like looking at the world, but they're not like super politically aware yet. So, but the vibe is off, and then they go to college, and then they get fed kind of the BS that they're, you know, we've all been talking about for a decade with colleges, and it's been there for longer. And then they just get like super resentful towards the college. And then they lead towards just like, they get into like more of the extreme, like they get more racist, they get more, because it's like the backlash against something that is so clearly wrong with like the way that we're structuring colleges and how it's done and all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, there's so many college dropouts at my job. Like all these guys, I knew them when they were in college. I've been working at the job I work at for like 6 months. And I knew them when they were in college, and now they're dropping out, like one by one. And it's like, they I mean, my business, there's like, my job, the company I work at, there's a very promising, like, ride up the corporate ladder. You don't need a degree. You don't need to waste your life. You can just work a bunch and eventually get paid really, really, really well. And they're dropping out, going to trade school, whatever it is. people, it seems like, are doing anything but college. Even the people who initially made the decision to go to college are now regretting that decision, going back on it.
Well, I don't blame you. It cost me $30,000 to get a four-year degree. Yeah. It's costing you $30,000 per year?
Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, MSU in-state's like $14,000. But, yeah. but still, if you go out,
My,
I think it was nine.
My school now is $75,000 a year.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. As a college dropout, I agree. We should abolish colleges.
Well, I mean, maybe cut some state funding. See who survives. Yeah. See who's actually doing a good job.
That was
good luck with that, bro. Yeah,
I remember just I remember that talking to Charlie Kirk way back in the day when I was doing college politics stuff. He would always talk about that. He's like, really, the plan? Cut 80% of colleges, just abolish all of them, just get rid of all their fundings, and then let them just fight over it and see who survives. Like that's what he would always say.
Darwinism.
I mean, if we know anything about America, it's like this free market idea is super important, and I want to see that with education. Like, why are we subsidizing education? Like, and even and this is a bit more radical, but even public education, it's like we sneer at Russia and China so much because they brainwash the kids in school. Who's to say we're not doing the same? I'm not saying we are. I mean, we are to a certain extent. But like, who's to say we're not doing the same as they are in China and Russia? They say the same thing about us, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Most people in America are educated by the government.
Yeah.
And nobody even thinks about that. Nobody even talks about that. And then even when you get to college, colleges don't have to do a good job. They don't have to charge you a reasonable price because they have essentially not a monopoly, but there's these state-funded schools that now the state once again has a say in your education, what you learn. And then also colleges don't have to do well because they're just going to get these huge grants continuously.
They get the huge grants. And then additionally that the loan market was dominated and actually, taken control of by Obama with the Fed loan program.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time that he was bailing out all the banks, he was monopolizing college loan market, which is where things exploded in terms of cost was after that. And then you can't go bankrupt.
Yeah.
You can't write off that debt on bankruptcy.
Right.
Which if you could, it would provide a heck of a disincentive to get unnecessary degrees and, a college that doesn't actually equip you.
Yeah. I mean, my generation's looking at a bit of an economic hellscape and also an educational hellscape. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very concerning. I think that is unintentionally leading or subconsciously leading to a lot of the resentment. It's like people don't realize that they all this stress that they have is really from this future. Like, what is our future? Like, where are we going to have our country in 50 years?
Mm.
And that resentment, I think, manifests into a bunch of different angles.
Definitely.
Highly democratic socialist and then all radical right wing.
Yeah. Right.
And it's interesting that radical right wing is the more cultural center right push, right? Mm-hmm. It's not everybody's there, but it's slightly that way because it hasn't been that way for a very long time.
Yeah.
And the fact that they would interpret it that way because of I'm getting you right, and I just tell me if I'm wrong here. It's because of the indoctrination has just put them in such a position of being the perpetual bad guy in the story.
Yeah.
That they're like, fuck it, I'm a bad guy now, and I'll just be the bad guy.
I'll be the villain.
That means I'll be the opposite of what you want me to be.
Absolutely.
You want me to be a socialist, so I'm going to be a raging Republican.
Absolutely. The two things that are trending are Nick Fuentes and Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah.
And that's
ironically.
That's one of the that's what it is. Absolutely. Every single teacher, pretty much every single teacher without fail, is liberal. Mm. And you can tell.
Yes.
And they push these, and this is public school, and they push these liberal ideas subconsciously. And a lot of times people catch it. I catch it every time because I'm I was raised to be super politically aware of okay, this is what they're doing. But not everybody does. But they catch it at least sometime. And have you ever met a teenager who doesn't go against the authority?
Yeah.
It's just natural.
It is and it isn't. When I was in college and in high school, everyone knew everything was left wing. Mm-hmm. It's just that's what everything was. And so me being the weird right winger was always the one that was weird in class. And that was just what it was. Mm-hmm. I was the equivalent of the goth kid, right?
Yeah.
I wasn't goth, but the equivalent of the goth kid where I'm the vast minority and the system's going against me. But there was no center right bias at all. It was all center left. And I wonder why that is, other than the Trump phenomena, Trump making it cool in a way a little bit, but also
Trump is probably a heroic figure in a sense. Like he probably hits this archetype of just being I like that guy. He's just kind of no nonsense, that type of thing.
I mean, he's a cool guy. He has aura, is the
case. There's aura.
Nothing bad can happen. It can only good happen.
I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen the account like Mytho MAGA on Twitter. I don't follow them. I'm not a diehard MAGA or diehard Trump guy, but you can't question the fact that like he has this vibe about him that everybody likes.
He's mimetic. Like there's a meme there that people latch onto. And I think JD's like, speaking of you like JD, I think JD has a lot of that mimetic energy that people are latching onto. And it's different than Trump's.
We saw that during the VP debate where he did the Vance glance.
That was great.
Or just like he's embodying internet culture and going with
the fat memes.
I also suspected somewhat Notonia, like the left got overextended at some point. Like they overdid it. And then that's also why it's that way. That's why it's more the non-political person is slightly more right wing, and that's leading to an aggregate more right wing overall because the left overextended. Is that right?
Yeah,
maybe. I mean, like, it has something to do with the transgender thing and just getting a little bit too culturally dominant.
The transgender thing, too, in particular, it's like I think a lot of people were just so sick and tired of being preached to and being told what you're supposed to believe. It's like in the beginning of the gay rights stuff, it's just like, no, you can tolerate this, and everybody's like, yeah, we can tolerate this, and then eventually it became like, no, you have to attend the parades or you're a bigot. You know, like, it turned into this thing.
It's a slippery slope. It's like yeah, absolutely. It's like, okay, first, let us get married and let it be recognized by the state. Second, bake our cake. And now and now it's like you have to sit there and watch while your peers' genitals are cut off.
It's the domino meme. Like it started with the small thing and then it's like
you know? No, I mean, I've seen memes with that too where it's like a curve, like a slippery slope, and it's got, you know, different soy jack, you know, whatever. It's funny. Anyways, I think the left definitely overextended, and when like Obama, like the left, when the left had complete cultural control and there wasn't as much resistance to it, I think that was because like, well, it's like, well, yeah, obviously we're not going to be right wing. Right wing is like, so 1920 or 1920 was left wing, but you get my point. So like in the past, and if you're not voting for Obama, then you're racist. Mm-hmm. Whereas now it's like, okay, you better not be a right winger, because then you don't think that we should be touching your kids. It's like, well, wait, time out. I don't think you should be touching my kids.
Maybe just one final question as we maybe start wrapping this thing down. How did COVID affect like your politics, but also just your generation? Like you're probably in that weird section where you would have been coming out of like what, middle school?
Yeah,
coming out. Like eighth grade or so?
Starting out middle school.
Yeah. How did that affect things for you?
It produced
politically
a lot of, I mean, for me specifically, like obviously it's radicalizing, but if you weren't already political at that time, I think it created like a lot of like, and this is kind of funny, but it's also true, created a lot of autism. Like because kids were socially cut off, they are now less emotionally aware. And so I think what less emotional awareness leads to is like, okay, yeah, somebody's feelings are going to be hurt, but I need to say this because it's true. Somebody's feelings are going to be hurt, but we need to pass this law because it's for the greater good of this country.
You're more disagreeable.
Right.
Yeah. Is, I mean, like they're okay hurting other people's feelings.
Right.
Yeah.
If it's for what they believe is something good. Like there's this guy, Joe Rigney. I don't know if you're familiar. He wrote this book called The Sin of Empathy, where he basically dives into how people allow certain Christians have allowed emotion to rule what they believe as opposed to truth. Hmm. And I think what they've done with COVID by making a bunch of kids autistic, essentially, is they've created people who, okay, they don't even have that emotional thing. It's just all about truth, which, I mean, I think there's downsides to that, but I think politically we're going to see a lot of upsides to that.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
Cheers.
Yeah. No, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Good time. So check us out on, we got our Discord link below. Check us out on all of our social media. We're blowing up all over the place on YouTube Shorts. This very recently, we're at like 30,000 views on one of our videos.
There you go.
Awesome. Check it out, guys. So thank you so much for watching. Catch you guys next time.
Peace.
Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember,
he's a knower. He's a knower.
He's a knower.